Hi, and welcome to the Reading Revolution powered by BookVending.com. I'm your host, Josh Gregory. In this episode, we're heading to the West Coast to explore the really cool things happening at Sista Sci-Fi Bookshop, SistaSciFi.com. The Reading Revolution starts now. Are you ready to embark on an adventure through the world of words? Join us on the Reading Revolution and let's explore the exciting world of literacy together. My guest today on the Reading Revolution is Isis Asari. She's the owner-operator of SistaSciFi.com, a cauldron of all things Afroculturism, indigenous culturism, science fiction noir, and so much more. She's casting her literacy spell of promoting Black authors in her community, and it is a pleasure to welcome her to the Reading Revolution. Isis, how are you? Isis, thank you so much for being on the Reading Revolution. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing excellent. Hey, let's start off. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can jump right into Sista Sci-Fi. But a little bit of background about how you got involved in this really unique project.
Sure. I am Isis Asari. I'm CEO and founder of Sista Sci-Fi. So Sista Sci-Fi is the first Black-owned bookstore focused on science fiction and fantasy in the U.S., and I did validate that fact with the American Booksellers Association. So Sista Sci-Fi started in 2019, so this February makes our five-year anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. And Sista Sci-Fi is located primarily in cyberspace. And a question that we used to get a lot from Sista Sci-Fi siblings is like, where is the brick and mortar store, right? And so last year I launched three Sista Sci-Fi book vending machines. So that is the answer to that question. Where's the Sista Sci-Fi book, brick and mortar? It is the Sista Sci-Fi book vending machines. So we have three launched. So they're customized into the bookworm machines. So two are in Seattle. So one is at Distant Worlds Coffee. The other one is at the Northwest African American Museum. And the third one is here in downtown Oakland at Chapter 510 of the Department of Make-Believe.
Awesome. So where did you find out about Into the Bookworm? And what was the thinking behind it of, hey, I love science fiction. I love books. And I've got this really great idea for a bookstore. Bringing Inchi into it, how did that all come about?
Yeah, you know, I wish I had like this big like eureka moment. I guess, so there are a lot of questions. So the way it came, it being customized into the bookworm book vending machines was, that was the power of Google, right? I was like, I need a book vending machine. Who does book vending machines? I Googled it and into the bookworm came up and I was like, oh yeah, this is perfect.
Problem solved.
So, so I started conversations. I think commercial uses, like, so mine is a commercial use. So I'm selling the machines, and other deployments of Into the Bookworm are at schools and at libraries, which are great deployments. But like the kids, the teachers give students coins. The students take the coins to the machine and they put, and the students put the coin in the machine and they are able to select their book. Mine being a commercial deployment needed some special tweaks to the Into the Bookworm machine. And then also like a lot of the Sista Sci-Fi books were bigger than like some of the books that were given away at Into Bookworm. So we had to adjust like the shelves and I had to get special coils. This may be getting too deep into the weeds, but I rarely get to talk about it at this level. So but for the most part, the Into the Bookworm worked very well for what I was trying to do.
So let's take a step back just for a second and talk a little bit about, you know, your upbringing. And was sci-fi literature always something that you were interested in? I mean, a wonderful genre of literature, but not something that's always for everyone. How did you get involved in just this love of sci-fi?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And I think in the American psyche, there's like this entrepreneurial journey where it's like, yeah, and I've been like into sci-fi or coding since I was like in the womb. And my story isn't like, so I tend to avoid that question, but it is a great question. So in my house, reading and education were always core, right? It was like breakfast, right? Or like brushing your teeth. Like you just know you're going to do that. So I was always surrounded by books. And then growing up, I was very intentional about reading literature by Black writers. So I think, you know, by the time I was in my early 20s, I'd read everything that Toni Morrison had published by that time. Like, one of my favorite books is by Alice Walker. Separate from that, I watched a lot of science fiction and fantasy movie and television. So, like, my favorite, back when people were watching cable stations, my favorite cable station was Sci-Fi, right? Growing up, or like, before starting Sister Sci-Fi, I didn't do a lot at that intersection of like Black and Indigenous culture and science fiction. Somehow in my mind, they're always really separate. And so one day I was discussing Octavia Butler's Lilith's Brood with a good friend. And when we finished discussing it, she was like, "Do you know Tomi Adeyemi? Do you know Nnedi Okorafor?" And these are some of like the major pillars of Black speculative fiction. I'll use an umbrella term. And I, at that time, I did not, right? And this is like me, this is less than 10 years ago. So I really should have known. And I did not. And not only did I miss the memo of like notable authors in Black literature, but I'm also like a child of West African immigrants, as Nnedi is and as Tomi is. So I also felt like I missed that memo. And so I was like, I don't want anybody else to miss this memo. Like, this is my new mission. And I felt like Sister Sci-Fi would be like well-read Black girls, but focus on science fiction. And it became an e-commerce destination, because at that time I was working for a leading e-commerce company and I had that skill set. And it's something that I passionately enjoyed. So I was like, let me develop this further into an e-commerce bookstore. And so that's where we are today. So now I get to spend a lot of time being a student of and an advocate for science fiction at that intersection of Black and Indigenous identity. And I, for me, it allows me the space to imagine beyond the current oppressive systems that I navigate. And that's very empowering for me as a Black queer woman.
And again, so a niche need and a way to fill it. I mean, that is really truly the entrepreneurial spirit and a way to do so and have it in multiple locations. That's also a very interesting part of your story.
Yeah, so Sister Sci, when I started Sister Sci-Fi, I was living in Seattle, right? So when I decided locations based off of website traffic. And so because I started in Seattle, there was a lot from Seattle, and I was living in Oakland, so there was a lot in Oakland. So those are going to be the two cities. There's also like a lot of traffic from New York, DC, and Atlanta. So if any listeners are listening from those locations and you have a high traffic venue that wants Sister Sci-Fi vending machine, please reach out. And I definitely want to expand like within our current states, so Washington and California, but I would also love to expand to the West Coast, so it's like a coast to coast US presence. I would love to launch in an airport. So if anybody's lighting sage or casting spells, please hold that in your meditation, like to see a Sister Sci-Fi book vending machine in your favorite airport. I definitely want to launch more Sister Sci-Fi book vending machines.
So talk a little bit about your clientele, folks who are interested in the subjects you're talking about. How is it for them to become kind of a, not just a repeat customer, but really kind of a devotee to not the program and all the things that you're doing surrounding these machines?
Yeah, so I who is the community? So I think of people who are excited and passionate about science fiction, primarily literature, and the intersection of Black and Indigenous cultures, like Sister Sci-Fi siblings. Sister was very like gendered, right? So that's why I became siblings. So that's like gender neutral. We can all be Sister Sci-Fi siblings. And I'll talk about it in a couple of different ways. So like the ideal customer really is that Black and or Indigenous woman, right? Typically there's some educational achievement, or like they're self-educated. They're really excited and building community in their own way. They love to talk about the books, but not just like, oh, this was a great book, but like, this book talked about the theme of sexuality, or this book talked about the theme of questioning authoritarian rules. This book talked about like climate fiction and how we can be aligned in the book and taking the themes of the book and then using that to inform their day-to-day lives and how they show up in community. The ideal customer service tends to be in more urban areas, right, where it's easy to gather in communities. And again, that was the ideal, like when I thought about like the ideal customer and like that prototype, that was the ideal. But then since we're online and accessible wherever you have internet access, a lot of the customers that are very active on social media are people who tend to be more isolated and actively looking for community and looking for community online. Sister Sci-Fi siblings are excited and engaged, right? And that, I think that's the key thing, they're engaged. So it's not simply that they are buying the book, but they are hosting their own book clubs. They're teaching the book in their high school classroom. They are librarians. They are, you know, product managers at leading tech companies and like hosting like Sister Sci-Fi or authors at their companies. They're really trying to take the worlds that they see in these books and, following the advice of Octavia Butler, write their own worlds that are more just and more equitable for all of us, despite like our identities and our politics. And to me, that's the most powerful aspect of it. I can go on and on about like how much I love the Sister Sci-Fi siblings, but I'll stop there.
But what a great way to actually talk about literature in a way of talking about literature. We read these books, and just as some folks go see a movie, the first thing they want to do is tell somebody else about it. So this is another really great outlet for people to do just that with the specifics of the books that they're reading through Sister Sci-Fi.
Yes. And I mean, like, Sister Sci-Fi siblings like to process and dissect everything. So like, I'm a bookstore, so I tend to talk about books, but like also like movies. So we love to process and dissect Janelle Monáe's latest album or books. So like, if it was Dune 2 or Parallel coming to Netflix, like we'll discuss that, or Discovery or Star Trek Discovery on Paramount Plus. Like, so we like to discuss all forms of science fiction and fantasy, particularly when there's that representation of Black and Indigenous identity, and like very intersectional. So like, it talks about like gender identity, it talks about sexual identity, it talks about race and class and like usurping like Western ideals of hierarchy.
And one of the things that I love about literature and in all forms of entertainment, I'll use that for some, is the ability to talk about these issues freely. Now, there might be someone who disagrees or wants to shut things down, but you're never going to take away that print. And sci-fi is such a unbelievably great vehicle for that, because it is fantasy, but still day-to-day topics can be discussed and brought into the what ifs. And that's the one reason that I love sci-fi and fantasy so much myself.
I 100% agree. So sci-fi really allows us a way to get around like those boundaries that we've set up in our brain, but haven't even taken the time to one question and explore to see if they're serving us, right? So I've read, and I need to find this article again, that like reading sci-fi increases reader's sense of empathy, because in a lot of times in sci-fi, you're really putting yourself in the point of view that's vastly different from your own. Right now, I'm reading Caldwell Turnbull's "There No Gods, No Monsters," right? Hopefully this isn't a spoiler, but at one point they're like, if you are going to stand up for the rights of women and queer people and like underrepresented minorities, then you need to stand up for the rights of monsters. And I was like, monsters? But and it just continues to push that boundary. Like, who are people that I consider monsters in my society who I'm not showing up for, right? And like, so science fiction and fantasy allows you to begin to ask yourself those questions that you probably not would not read if you're reading like a biography or a nonfiction or a historical, like, or even like traditional fiction that kind of follows in line with our everyday. So I think it's a very powerful tool for that.
What's it like, Ben, having to, you know, use these machines the way that they're using them without a brick and mortar facade where, you know, there's that location where if I want to go to see a concert, I go to that concert hall. Talk a little bit about the uniqueness of having these multiple locations where there's not just that one place people go.
Yeah, so one, I love that question. And like, there's so much that comes up for me. So the Sister Sci-Fi, the location stays pretty, so it's not like I move them like once a week. So usually like I'm looking for permanent homes. It's launched about each, so each vending machine is, but they've been there for like at least a year. And usually it's because of something has happened to the location. I'm not like, I gotta move the machine. So they're permanent locations. And working with a location is very much in line with like my values as a Black woman, as a queer woman. It makes it much more collaborative. So it's not like come, not that it would be a bad thing, but it's not like come to the Sister Sci-Fi bookshop. It's really come see the Sister Sci-Fi book vending machine. Check out Chapter 510. This is amazing work that Chapter 510 does, right? Chapter 510 is a youth literary nonprofit in Oakland. So they're giving opportunities to Oakland teenagers, most of which are queer, and teenagers of color to actually like write and publish their work and share their work, which is an amazing mission. And so I get to highlight the authors and also highlight their work. Same thing with Just the World's Coffee. So by the name, you can tell it's a science fiction and fantasy themed coffee house, but it's also queer woman run. Most of their staff are like non-conforming in some way. And they have taken steps to like pay all their employees like a livable wage. Like, so they're really forward and progressive in the values that they espouse as a coffee house. Right. And so I get to say, like, come to the Sister Sci-Fi Book Vending Machine, come to events there, but also check out this amazing organization. And of course, same thing with the Northwest African American Museum. And so, like, having the vending machines at the location allows me to actively support the mission of these organizations and drive foot traffic there, which is like a win-win all the way around. And so, in the same way I pour into the organizations, organizations pour into Sister Sci-Fi and pour into the community. So the last time I was at Distant World, I was there with I was there for an author event. So the Gibb sisters, which are like they're twins, and they're also like are like they work together as authors. It's the most amazing thing ever. So they came up to Seattle from LA, and so like Distant World is like, you know, let me make sure y'all have something to drink. Let me make sure y'all have something to eat, and just kind of poured into us. And that was beautiful and did a lot to promote the event. So it's definitely collaborative. It's definitely a way to like, how do we grow together as a community and pull our resources to do that, which is almost revolutionary in a sense, I think.
Well, the perfect place to talk about revolutionary things is on the Reading Revolution. So thanks. We'll do a quick little cheap plug there. Why not? If you're going to get famous, I might as well too, alongside you. So if you could talk a little bit about and kind of walk us through how folks get the tokens for the books that are in the machines.
All right. Great question. So for the Sister Sci-Fi Book Vending Machines, we take almost any payment, but right now we don't take tokens. So you can pay with cash. You can pay with Apple Pay. You can pay with Google Pay. You can pay with like any major credit card. So it's more aligned with, in terms of payment, your traditional vending machine, in that like you can take almost any type. Preferred payment is electronic, but any type of payment.
And that makes sense given the nature of where the machines are located. It's not, you know, it would be a little bit easier to do it than that method. So again, you know, your entrepreneurial skills at shine there. You mentioned that you worked for a book reseller before you branched out into this yourself. Can you talk a little bit about your, you know, your schooling and your business acumen before pulling the strings and just saying, hey, I'm going to do this and get my machines and hit the ground running?
Yeah, jumping out of the helicopter. I don't know if you watched the latest episode of The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, but that's how the last episode ended. Like, characters are jumping out of helicopters. Anyway, so my background. I went to college, like a lot of people. I went to Peace Corps. I did Peace Corps in Ghana because both of my parents are from Ghana, and I was like, what organization is going to send me to Ghana? And it was Peace Corps. So I went. I lived in Ghana for 3 years before coming back to the US to go to grad school. So I got a joint master's in public policy and MBA. And so for me, I was very like in public, they had us all develop like a 1-3 line introduction, which is probably why I do it now. It's like, so I'm very passionate about like technology and telecommunications as a tool for economic development. I think I was saying sub-Saharan Africa or something like that. So I was very passionate about using technology as a tool to create economic opportunities for underserved populations. And so that kind of like fostered my career. So post graduate school, I tended to work for large tech companies, primarily in finance and business development, with the sole purpose of developing those skills so I could one day be an entrepreneur and do something like that. Unlike a lot of other booksellers, I wasn't like, oh yeah, one day I'll open a bookstore, and just like kept that in the back of my mind. So I knew, so throughout the course of my career, one realization that happened is like, I am very excited about customer-centric brands, right? So in tech, like it can be very sexy to do something B2B, and I'm like, this is great, that doesn't light my fire. I wish it did, it's very lucrative. But for me, it's like connecting with consumers on a more individual basis and aligning with brands that excite their passion, which is kind of like, you know, probably why I ended up doing something like Sister Sci-Fi, because like people who love sci-fi, right? Like they're very passionate about it. And like, they are happy to like be on like, how can we build this community on tech-based platforms? So like a big part of Sister Sci-Fi's revenue channel is social commerce. So like selling on Instagram and Facebook, which is slightly different than a traditional bookstore. Then of course we have the Sister Sci-Fi book vending machines, and like my customers are very astute with like, yes, I'm gonna buy this online. Like I'm fine with it like coming to my house, right? And shipping and all that kind of stuff. Then like even when I do pop-ups, like it's a very streamlined POS, right? So like my customers are excited about exploring like that tech journey with me. And I'm like, I'm always thinking about ways like, how do I streamline this and allow like my communities to grow and allow myself like a bigger reach to support my authors by continually implementing technology? How do I like, a lot of bookstores are very focused on their local community, which is amazing. But because I have like that genre niche, I've always been focused on like, how do I make it a national footprint, either with like virtual events that people can join from anywhere, or like being able to use like AI to like create press releases so that I can like promote events like all up and down the West Coast, hopefully all up and down the East Coast, right? Or like something like a vending machine, which I could have a national network. Right now, the question I'm asking myself is like, is there a way that I can take aspects of Sister Sci-Fi and make that international? Like, could I have a Sister Sci-Fi book vending machine in Heathrow International Airport? I don't know, but it's a question. So I'll stop there.
Well, you mentioned the pop-ups. What other kind of activities are you doing, you know, around Sister Sci-Fi that may or may not even involve, you know, the inching machines as part of your book vending program? What else are you doing?
Where to start? So the big initiatives for this year are driving more traffic to the website, doing events around the Sister Sci-Fi book vending machine, the Inchi the Bookworm, the customized Inchi the Bookworm machine, and more in-person events. It's not a post-pandemic world, but people miss seeing each other in three-dimensional space. So that's where the last one comes in. So in 2024, I started one of the new initiatives were Sister Sci-Fi West Coast book tours. So we did two of those between January and February. I'm talking to publishers to hopefully do another one with David F. Walker for his book coming out later this summer. So that's a really huge initiative. I'm trying to see if I can also do like the East Coast equivalent, so Sister Sci-Fi East Coast book tours. So with the West Coast book tours, the goal is to like hit for the two that happen, it's LA, San Francisco, Oakland, Portland, and Seattle. So most of the major cities on the West Coast. And I know like I'm missing some cities and people are like, I can't believe it. She doesn't think Sacramento is a major city. Sacramento is a real city. It just, you know, I have to work with publishers. And then on the East Coast, it would be potentially Boston, but definitely New York, Philly, DC, and maybe Atlanta, just depending on the partnerships. And it's a mix of like events that I would do that are Sister Sci-Fi events. And then again, going back to that spirit of collaboration, working with other primarily Black-owned bookstores to do events at their store, but just promoting the whole thing together as a tour. So, and the importance of that is not just brand building for Sister Sci-Fi, but oftentimes, Black and Indigenous authors don't get the in-person events, and that impacts sales, right? And then they don't get on the bestseller list. So these initiatives are trying to like usurp that in a way that's like accessible to allow booksellers to like meet their community and drive more sales. So that came from research, but then it also came from like a quote from Octavia Butler. So one of Octavia Butler's best-selling works is Parable of Sawyer. To do that, like Octavia Butler had to switch publishers. So she moved to Four Walls, Eight Windows Press, which is now Seven Story Press. And that allowed Parable to reach audience that weren't just science fiction fantasy readers. And it was one of the first times that she had like a major tour to connect with the readers to like give context to the work. And so we saw that like, I think it was September 2020 that it made the New York Times bestseller list. So like the in-person events and the tours are kind of like the seed to like grow the audience and build sales and a base for these authors in my mind. That's my working hypothesis. Anyway, so there's that, and there's working with a lot of organizations for large author events. So last week I did an event with KQED. We had Brie Luna, Blood, Sex, Magic. So I was the bookseller for that. Next month I'll work with City Arts and Lectures. They're having a major science fiction fantasy author, so I will be the bookseller for that. I also got a grant from the City of Oakland to do two Oakland Arts and Lectures. So in May, I'll have Tommy Orange and Dr. Darcy Little Badger here. And so like that will be a free event and people can attend, listen to the authors. And then if they feel so inspired by books from Sister Sci-Fi. So
what's the community reception been like, not only with the Sister Sci-Fi and the specifics that are around SisterSciFi.com, but the machines as well? How do people react to seeing these things that are branded, you know, the Sister Sci-Fi book vending machines?
People get really excited. The publisher's like, oh wow, that's a very innovative idea. Paper Random House is like, we did this, right? We did, like, I'm like, yes, you did it. So Paper Random House, I think, like, launched book vending machines like almost a century ago in London. And I think maybe tried again in the US fairly recently. But in general, the publishers love it. They love like also like the social media promotion that I do along with it. Readers from like a young age, like from 4 to 104, like excited. Like I think they like the colors. It almost looks like a display. Like you see all like the book covers. That's really exciting. Some of the like, And especially with some of the book covers, like there's speculation about Niecy Saul, where you see like this little black girl and she has these magic glasses and they're all like these purples and pinks. And like to be a black woman or a black girl who loves science fiction and fantasy and to see that, you just like, it's a moment of like, oh my God, I just feel so seen. It feels like a very mirrored moment. So there's a lot of that. And there's just like a lot of like excitement and just like, I can't wait. I want one in my living room. So you probably don't want it in your living room, but just like a lot of excitement and like, oh wow, that's a really great idea. Or like, I can't wait to check them out. So people have made trips to Oakland just to visit the Sister Sci-Fi book vending machine and same thing with Seattle. So that it's been a lot of positive reception, particularly on social media from both the publishers, from the readers. The authors are always excited to have their books in them. Just like, one author was like, my goal is to have the book in the Sister Sci-Fi book vending machine. Like, that's amazing, and we can make that happen. So yeah, so it's been pretty positive thus far. I think the biggest like feedback is like, can it be in more places? Yeah, and just like, you know, like anything in technology, like 99% of the time it works beautifully, and then there's the 1% of the time where it's like, oh, what happened? So
And there's something to be said, though, about the magic of that cultural ownership. You know, we had a guest on not too long ago on the Reading Revolution that talked about the installation of an Inchi Bookworm machine into an Indigenous school in Regina, Saskatchewan, and some of the students realizing that all the books were from Indigenous authors, and the look on their faces, our guest was just saying, oh, they were like, oh, that those are my people. I mean, these are books about me written by folks like me. That's just that essence of magic you can't beat by in any other way. You just can't take away that amazing feeling. And I would assume the same is what you were just talking about seeing an image of a book. It's just a wonderful feeling.
yeah, 100%. And seeing like a reflection of you in that book, because, you know, sometimes publishing, sometimes literature, particularly like in Western countries like the US, the UK, can reflect the dominant culture. So if you're not that, it can feel like you're almost invisible. So yes, 100% agree with that. The vending machine in the Northwest African Museum is focused on Black authors with a connection to the Pacific Northwest. So yeah, to give that same sense of like, I'm here in the Pacific Northwest and so are these writers. Like, we have a shared bond and experience, and that's a very beautiful moment. So I can only imagine what it was like for those students to see also like First Nations authors that reflect their experience. That sounds amazing.
And that magic is contagious. You know, you can see it actually growing with one person and the next person and the next person. It just becomes that community that you've been talking about.
And I mean, like, a librarian would have better statistics on this, but like, oftentimes teachers will be like, oh, this student doesn't like to read. And like, because they are offering stuff that doesn't necessarily reflect that student's cultural experience, like, and how much that can change when you offer reading options or literature options that are more aligned with that student's view of the world, at least to get them into reading, right? And that can be powerful, right? So yeah, so agreed that it can be contagious, it can be expansive, it can be world building, it can be all the things.
And there's a good mix with that, where it's not only what you're familiar with, but the possibilities that come with the whole idea of science fiction fantasy, where the possibilities are endless.
Yes. That's 100% it. The possibilities are 100% endless.
So, what are you working on right now that you can talk to us about? You know, you mentioned the book tours. Anything else that that you can share of what's in the works with Sister Sci-Fi?
What is in the works? This is a sci-fi. Yeah, I would
We
say the
do cut.
biggest thing is the Oakland Arts and Lectures with Tommy Orange and Darcy Little Batcher here in downtown Oakland on May 5th. That's like the next big thing. So yeah.
So where can people find you on social media? Obviously, sistasci-fi.com, but the other outlets where people can engage you with what's going on and start a conversation there.
All the outlets. So we are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, TikTok, Blue Sky, Pinterest, YouTube, all the places at Sista with an H, sci-fi, all one word, all lowercase. And yeah, just especially on Instagram, there are a lot of copycat accounts, but it's just, it's a sci-fi. So if there's any, if there's an extra I, if there's an O, if there's a dash, that's not us. It's just, it's a sci-fi.
Well, thanks so much for being on The Reading Revolution. It's been a pleasure to hear your story, and we will keep in touch and let us know of anything's coming down the pipeline, and we can do this again.
Awesome. That sounds great. Thank you so much, Joshua.
And that'll wrap it up for this episode of The Reading Revolution. I'm your host, Josh Gregory. If you haven't already, please like, share, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and share us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Our technical directors and content creators are David Gagan and Thomas Crane. The Reading Revolution is produced by Jake Blumberg and Connor Russo. Its executive producer is Jay Blumberg. Find us at bookvending.com. We'll see you next time on The Reading Revolution. For more information about The Reading Revolution, please visit bookvending.com. If you would like to contact us or would like to suggest a guest, drop us a line at readingrevolutionpod@gmail.com. The Reading Revolution is hosted by Josh Gregory, with technical direction from Thomas Crane and David Gagan. The podcast is produced by Jake Blumberg and Connor Russo. The executive producer is Jay Blumberg. Thanks again for watching and listening. We'll see you here again on The Reading Revolution, where literacy matters.